Just something, actually, if you don't mind me referencing, because in an interview yesterday, the very, very sad passing of Jacqueline Devenny was referenced. Jacqueline, who many called her Jack, passed away in March, so it's very, very recent. And there was no ill will meant whatsoever, but it was stated that she died as a result of acute myeloid leukemia, because that was part of the conversation we were having there. Now, I've learned since, and as I say, I would never want to cause any upset to anyone, and I know exactly how this must feel. Genuinely, I do know. Jacqueline's cause of death is yet to be determined, so the family don't know. They haven't been informed yet by the coroner. That's my understanding. That haven't the family haven't yet been informed. So, you know, you can understand, any of us could understand, if it was stated someone's cause of death and you, the family, her loved ones didn't even know, that would be very hurtful. And I would never, ever want to put that hurt on anyone. So if anyone of our family or friends were listening or are listening, I really am very, very sorry. And I'm sorry for any upset at this difficult time, because Jacqueline, who was so well thought of and was such a wonderful person, according to those that I've been speaking to, she only passed away in March, and it's a very, very tough time. So I wouldn't want to add anything to that, but just to be clear. And I think it's just particularly because the family themselves haven't been informed, and to hear it being mentioned on this program when you don't know yourself, and I've seen it published elsewhere as well, it'd be tough, and I just don't want to be part of that. So my apologies, and we send all the love and strength that may possibly help at this difficult time to Jacqueline's husband and family and her friends. Moving on to some comments here. Greg, people complain every day about how people in our society are becoming more rude and don't apologise and don't have any manners anymore. However, they ignore the fact that this directly corresponds with a downturn in religious beliefs. We built a successful country with our Christian religion intertwined into our culture. The role of Christianity is in our success shouldn't be forgotten. Yeah, I agree, and some people do say that. My experience is, and maybe it's because I'm lucky, I find them, particularly young people, are amazing and very, very polite and courteous. I don't want someone to say, when I judge politeness, I don't want anyone to go, please, sir, or please, Mr. this or whatever, just to be able to have a conversation, and a respectful conversation, a mutually respectful conversation. Or, and I find I'm more impressed than disheartened with that, to be honest with you. Morning, Greg. Did the Irish Daily Mail report today that Ukrainians are currently receiving an Irish state pension? Just wondering if your listeners were aware of that. Yes, indeed. It's their front page story. I presume it's part of their protective status here, that the if they're entitled to a state pension, that it's us that's paying it. And I think, let me see what the figures are. It's costing the state 5,500 Ukrainian refugees are getting an Irish pension, and it's costing it's cost 14 million euros so far. A lot of people might not have an issue with that. I'm around the same age as India, and my secondary school did teach us about other religions, not just Catholic. I am struggling to remember if there was any teachings of other religions in my time. I can't really recall. You're losing the focus. It isn't the people that are coming in looking for the change. It's the teachers that are more than likely Irish. Yes, indeed, but it was the reasons behind it. But I appreciate what you say. And someone else sent a post. Only 21% of teachers responded to the survey, but the results are being treated as a mandate for sweeping structural change. That's quite true. But, you know, if you listen to an opinion poll, it's often, you know, a 1,500 people in total. So 21% of the entire population. So 21% of teachers responding to a survey is pretty big, if you know what I mean. It's a big sample size, way, way, way bigger than any viewership, listenership, opinion poll figures. Having listened to the radio this last couple of days, I thought the majority of teachers were against teaching religious faith, but found an article online which showed that they actually rejected it outright. You said that the changes to our school formation is not coming from outside, but a very vocal minority. We see a drop in the census on practicing Catholic, but maybe also part of that percentage is new immigrants to the country who are not Christian. Yes, of course. I mean, at this point, the driving force by in a reduction of people in this country that identify as Catholic is not people that no longer do. It is going to be a changing population. The actual motion was defeated 196 to 285. It props up every year. Question is, what replaces it? Muslim ideology, Marxism, one world order, the new transgender program? That what will fill the vacuum? Do we trust the government to fill the vacuum? I don't. I'm a communion class teacher and I love it. Please, people don't realise that if we take religion out of schools, then we shouldn't get the Easter holidays or Christmas. Good morning, Greg. Just to say well done to Highland Radio for following up with Rosina this morning. This was yesterday morning regarding the cancer care patient's journey and the interview with Boyd. So sad and difficult for him to tell. I recognise from my own experience of losing family to cancer in Donegal, nothing seems to change. We can help start that change, says a listener. Morning, Greg. We were dropped a brown bin, a wee bin, for food, as we already give what wee bit of food waste we have to our hens. We've discovered that €8.20 has been taken out of our account for March and April. When we rang the company, we were told it's a charge for a food bin that we thought was free, but we never leave the wee brown bin out to be collected. So how do they charge? As we said to a few neighbours, they didn't think there was a cost. My daughter lives over road. She's being charged £9.20. So I've rang today and I got through to someone in the Philippines, not Letterkenny. So a neighbour has returned his wee bin, as we will be doing the same thing and our daughter will too. We never were told at the time that there was an additional charge for lifting them. You think if a bin's not out, we should not be charged. Well, I think bins are sort of seen as a standing order, that you're as opposed to a payment of the actual service. That seems to be the way it's set out. I wouldn't be too happy if I got a bin that I didn't want and ended up having to pay €8 or €9 for it. Hi, Greg. You're on about housing. I'm on disability and desperate to get a council house. I know of two 2-bedroom apartments in Buncrana that are empty. There is people signing on the dole, getting their rent paid, and they're living in Derry. They never come near the property. I rang the housing in Carndonagh about it because I'm so desperate and was told there's nothing they can do about it. I'll have to leave where I'm staying shortly and the council will send me to Bundoran Hostel, which is no good because of my medication, as it has to be kept in the fridge. It's seriously strong. And any dad addict staying there will take it, so I'll end up with no meds and then end up in Letterkenny Hospital, if not dead. What am I supposed to do? They talk about mental health issues. I'm cracking up. I don't know where to turn. We've got in touch with the council and the individual in question, by the way. We'll bring you any update as soon as we get it. Right, okay, that's from yesterday. In relation to, and we'll move on from this story, by the way, you don't want to stay too long on something because it does get a little bit, but just in terms of preparation for the sacraments, communion and confirmation, the suggestion that perhaps it should take place outside the classroom. A lot of you commented on social media too, important commentary, so we want to get those views out there. Gemma said, religion should be totally banned from school. Whatever you want your kid to take part in outside of school, fair enough, but school is a place for education, not religion. Geraldine says, probably because the teachers don't practice Catholic faith themselves. I think it's very important, really, that this conversation is being had with teachers, not about teachers. It's not them and us. You know, teachers are incredibly important and incredibly hardworking, and there's going to be a different views within that spectrum. You know, and teachers are us. They're our family. They're our nieces, our daughters, our sons. So I don't understand the them and us angle on this. Seamus says, you don't have to send your child to a Catholic school. Find an alternative. Bernie, let parents take them for the religious teaching at the weekend, maybe Sunday after Mass. Bridie, you don't have to send your child to a Catholic school. Other schools, there's plenty about. Seamus said, surely teachers knew what they were agreeing to when accepting a teaching position in a Catholic school. Patrick said, religion shouldn't be allowed in schools. And another Patrick, it's coming to the stage in this country, it'll be an offence to bless yourself, let alone teach the kids the Catholic religion. What? Two more here from Joan. Catholic school teach religion. It's part of their curriculum, but preparing them for both should be done outside of schools at a sort of Sunday school involving parents, my opinion anyway, and I'm entitled to it. Joan, of course you are. You don't need that caveat. Rebecca said, I don't agree with this. Only 600 responses, I believe. That does not give a majority agreement to reflect the majority of Catholic people. And Sally, they just want to destroy the Catholic faith. I know there is an argument for both sides of it, and it's a lot of extra responsibility for teachers, but if taken out of schools, it's the beginning of the end, I think. We're no longer a Catholic country. Now, Dr. Indiana Olbert is a lecturer in civil engineering, a program director, project and construction management, and a leading eco Hydrolinformatics Research Group, College of Science and Engineering, University of Galway, a wee bit stuttering within there, Indiana, but I believe I covered it all. Suffice to say, you seem somewhat qualified.
I hope so, yeah.
Of course you are. Listen, thank you so much for joining us. We do appreciate it. Now, research has found, and it's at the University of Galway, say parts of the West Coast a lucky escape from severe flooding during Storm Eowyn. Talk to me a little bit more about that, Doctor.
Yes, absolutely. So we are focused on coastal processes in our research, and in particular, we are interested to understand how the extreme weather events, such as storms, affect water levels and perhaps coastal flooding. So really, Storm Eowyn provided us a really good opportunity to try to understand these effects. And so in this particular research, we were trying to better understand what and where the maximum water level will occur. So we have analyzed over 40 locations around Ireland in terms of water levels, and we had some very interesting findings. The most important finding is that Storm Eowyn generated unprecedentedly high storm surges around Ireland, but in particular on the west of Ireland. And for example, in Galway, storm surge peaked at 2.6 meters above the tidal normal non-storm water level, which is unprecedentedly high. We haven't seen anything like that. We do have a record from 2007, and none of the other storms generated so extreme storm surge. Also in Limerick and in Shannon, we have seen extremely high storm surges. But despite really all of it, those extreme high water levels, the extreme storm surges and extreme wind speeds, as you might remember, we have witnessed them. Still, the flooding around Ireland wasn't particularly widespread. And that kind of generated our interest. And we found that those storm surges coincided with ebbing tide, which means with the outgoing water, and therefore the water levels were not really extreme. And in fact, they were only slightly higher as we would have seen on high water on a spring tide. So that really suggested to us that we were extremely, extremely lucky.
So what potentially could the consequences have been if this happened during a spring tide, or indeed a regular high tide, which I think everyone listening knows, certainly the high tide is twice a day, but you can have neap tides and high tides, right? So there are variables in there. But are you able to determine, given the, like, in other words, with a high tide, would the surge have been 2.6 meters above the high tide as well?
Absolutely. So we have looked at this and we found that if the Storm Eowyn occurred 4 hours earlier and those storm surges were generated with their peak 4 hours earlier, then the storm surge would coincide with high tide and the water level, for example, in Galway, would be of the magnitude of 3.6 meters above mean sea level. And those water levels would be much higher than those that we've seen during Storm Debbie in November 2023. And we remember that Storm Debbie actually did generated high water levels and was very impactful in terms of the coastal flooding. So definitely we would have seen much higher extreme water level that they would generate coastal flooding. But even more, if the Storm Eowyn occurred a week earlier on a spring tide, then we would have seen an absolutely extreme water levels, which means spring tides, let's say in Galway, are 2.5 meters. And on top of it, we would have seen 2.6 meters, which is around 5 meters of water above mean sea level. These are unprecedentedly high water levels that definitely would generate extreme flooding.
I mean, obviously there's a lot going on here, right? Because are we seeing an increase in sea levels? But then, of course, we're seeing potentially an increase in the weather and how it behaves that can drive this water further. So what is the greatest threat to us? Or is it a combination of perhaps more extreme weather tied in with potentially rising sea levels?
It's a combination of number of factors. For sure, we know at this point from all the attribution study that mean sea level is rising, right? And is rising quite rapidly. So obviously we'll have mean sea level rise. From our own research and evidence from research from our colleagues really worldwide, we'll see there will be higher rainfall, extreme rainfall, and we see that in Ireland as well. So if we think of the riverine compound with the coastal water levels, we might have some very much extreme compound event. So higher seawater levels, higher rainfall, and we also see higher wind speed, more extreme wind speed that will generate this push of water on the coast.
Now, I don't want to be dramatic, but looking forward, can we plan for this? In other words, can you increase sea defences, or are the changes such that really there are going to be potentially areas on our coast that are not inhabitable, or if they are, with great risk of major flooding events?
Yeah, so we can plan, of course. So there are different measures we can take. So one is the adaptation measure that's already kind of been in progress. And so in terms of the adaptation, what we could do, we could improve our infrastructure, breakwaters, embankments, higher dikes, kind of higher seawalls. So these are the hard engineering solutions that we could do. We can build dam, we can build barrages to protect ourselves. We can do better planning to not allow infrastructure buildings to be built in a flood zone. But also what we could do, which I think is extremely important, we can provide a better early warning system. Mm. So having very high local scale granular flood forecasting system would allow local authorities, individuals, communities, businesses to be better prepared for what is coming over the next few hours, over the next few days.
Now, just in relation to the planning, you mentioned, maybe restricting planning in areas likely to flood. In terms of where is likely to flood, we're quite reactionary, are we not? Should we not be looking to the future in 10, 20, 30 years at places that aren't likely to flood now, or at least likely to flood now, but we can say with some certainty might be likely to flood? And that's a more difficult project, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a massive project on its own to understand where are the future risks of flooding in terms of this in space. And I think there is a number of projects, and I think local authorities have been commissioning a number of projects really to determine what will be the climate change and therefore how this will impact a coastline, and therefore what planning regulations need to be in place to not allow to build in those coastal zones.
We talked, and finally, we talked about areas on the West Coast that would be very prone, but nowhere necessarily might escape. And I think we'll use Buncrana for an example. You looked at Buncrana, not as bad there, but certainly not immune to potential weather events. What was the findings?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have studied over 40 locations around Ireland. So obviously the west of Ireland, Galway, Shannon and Limerick were the most extreme. But all other locations, we also found them in extreme range. So in around Donegal area, we're looking specifically on Buncrana and Malinhead. So for this particular event, storm surges were between 1 and 1.2 metres, which we would consider already as extreme event that would have an impact on the coast.
Yeah, it's interesting and it is worrying. But when you compare it to some of the figures you've been talking about down the country as well, it makes it even more stark for our neighbours down there. Dr. Indiana Albert, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye. Take care. 0860 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number if you wish to get in contact with us. You heard in the news there, over 6,000 appointments were cancelled at Letterkenny University Hospital last year, up 44% compared to the previous year. A total of 6,216 cancellations were recorded at LUH, almost double the number of appointments cancelled at Sligo, for an example, up from 4,311 in 2023. The HSC says increased emergency department attendance, staff shortages, infection outbreaks and industrial action among the reasons for the high volume of cancellations. But if you look at comparable hospitals, there seems to be once again a particular issue here in County Donegal. And my apologies if I sound like a scratched record. Councillor Jerry McMonagall is a member of the Regional Health Forum West, and he joins us on the programme now. Jerry, thank you for your time. I do appreciate it. You know, these are 6,216 people. There might be some double ups there, I don't know. But some of these operations are, you know, they call them that some of them are really quite critical. You know, they're quite important as well. It's not necessarily just a broken toenail, as people would be aware, but they are a concern, these numbers.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to all the listeners. Yeah, look, and I'm sure, like yourself, the listeners are nearly fed up listening to this. And I've no doubt that some of the people who have received cancellations, it hasn't been the first time. And we've had a number of meetings recently with the HSC, CELTA, and the whole reconfiguration of CELTA. But I have no confidence in us changing the situation here at Letterkenny University Hospital anyway soon. It's quite clear, and it's been quite clear for quite a while, that there's an unequal healthcare service provided here in Donegal. When you just alluded to some of the figures for Sligo, who wouldn't have the same capacity of footfall as what LUH would have, and yet they're numbers, cancellations, people waiting is a lot smaller than ours.
They have more money per patient as well.
That's what I was going to get at. They have and continue to get more money per patient. And this is, we've been banging this drum for years. We've met with several ministers, both here in Letterkenny at the hospital and indeed in Dáil Éireann and around the country when we've took the opportunity to raise the issues about the LUH. And, you know, what's the reasons? And we keep hearing it, staff vacancies, the bed shortage, the capacity of a hospital itself. And this has been going on as long as I've been an elected member. These are the same old excuses that are being used, high incidence of attendance at the emergency department. What have we done to actually address it?
But why is Letterkenny University Hospital siloed then in relation to this? I mean, CELTA is a hospital group. You know, we heard from Rosina's meeting with the general management down there that, you know, much of what we're looking for, the management are looking for. And I know this is not directly related to what we're talking about now, but, you know, whatever the convoluted chain of management of CELTA is, either there's a plan for Letterkenny, which isn't to retain or enhance it, or there's no interest in fixing the problems there, or why not move people around within the hospital group to try and sort it out and recognise it as a particular problem. Let's not forget the consultant said it was like a like a war zone in there, stepping over patients in corridors. Like, that seems to have, no one's talking about that anymore. Well, we are talking about it, but you understand what I'm saying. So, like, why is Letterkenny University Hospital such a special case and in a bad way amongst this hospital group?
Well, that's the enigma, and that's what we're trying to get to the bottom of. If you remember a number of years ago, just prior to COVID, there was a substantial review was going to be carried out by people from Scottish-run Scottish hospitals. They say, we've never got findings of that as such. We look at the reasons, the vacancies. The meeting took place on Monday. There was another meeting yesterday around diabetes care. And it's the same excuses being used all the time. And what's coming across quite clearly in all the meetings that I've been at is the inequality, the healthcare service that we get here in Donegal. So, I mean, what I think has to be a root and branch review of the operation of Letterkenny University Hospital. And if people have to be brought in from outside to oversee that and to look at ways and means that we can improve it, then so be it. We need to do that. We can't continue to have Groundhog Day and coming on your show raising issues at the Regional Health Forum, raising issues on the floor of the Dáil about the constant inequality that we're experiencing here in Donegal.
Is it time for Tony Canavan to come up and sit amongst, be in front of councillors in a very respectful, organised way and answer specific questions about the plan for Letterkenny University Hospital, where investment is going to happen and in what services, why we're not seeing a minor injuries clinic up here, why there are so many vacancies, or why it takes so long for the simple moving around of departments within the hospital. You know, basic questions that demand answers. You know, is it time that he came up with respect to the people here? We elected you guys, right? And answer some of these most basic questions, because I find the fight for answers, be it through the forum, through meetings, through radio, whatever it is, it's actually making it worse. The frustration is building. You know, so we need to speak to the top person and get clear answers.
Yeah, look, and in fairness to Tony Canavan, he knows the issues. He knows he's been in the job for quite a while. He's working with what he's been given to work with. And also he's working within a plan.
Oh, right, but
HSE handed down to him. And
yes, but he's the boss of this region. Yeah, but he's
the upgrading of Letterkenny University Hospital.
He's the boss of this region. You were at that meeting on Monday. You would have heard the general manager explain how long they've been trying to increase capacity for cancer treatment, the problems that they're encountering, how long it's going to take for that to happen. So if Tony Canavan is aware of that, he's the boss. He's not on this. Like, I'm not being critical of him. If he's aware of it, why isn't he doing something to fix it? And if it's someone above his head, well, let's go to see them then and find out why Tony Canavan's hands are being tied. And as a result, then Sean Murphy's hands are being tied. Like, we need to break through this sort of bureaucracy and this shield of responsibility that people seem to have around them.
Yeah, I agree. And I understand your frustration. And I can tell you, we've been raising this and having these conversations.
Oh, I know you have. I know you have.
And we can clearly see of what he's been dealt with by the HSE and the people who are running the healthcare service here in Ireland. The minister and the head of the HSE are the people that need to come to Donegal. And they need to listen to the people of Donegal, and they need to change the way they deliver healthcare services in Donegal. You're right that we have asked for a number of years now for the elective surgeries and all of that to be speeded up, to be increased, for further investment to be put in. The fact that we're the second busiest Level 3 hospital, and Drogheda is the busiest, which is only 30 miles from Dublin. So we really are the poor cousins, as I've always described it, of the healthcare services in Ireland today. And we need to be upgraded. We need to be invested in. And the people who can do that are the head of the HSE and the minister. And he needs to come up here, or she needs to come up here now, along with the head of the HSE, and it need to be explained to us, the elected members, but more importantly, to the people of Donegal who are travelling day on day out for healthcare services.
And you might not know the specific answers to this question. I'm not trying to catch you out. So, but you're of the view then that the head of Sealta is of the view that Letterkenny University Hospital needs a new designation to take into account of how busy it is. And he would agree, would he, that our funding should at least be equitable to the funding given to Sligo University Hospital. Like, is he on that side of the argument as well, as far as you're aware?
Because he's working within the constraints of how the HSE has designated how healthcare services are to be delivered in Donegal. And look, we've had a lot of investment in the Letterkenny University Hospital this last number of years, and we can't get away from that. But it's not addressing the overall issue, which is the capacity, an ageing population.
A growing population.
Yeah, a growing population. All of that there, all of them demographics are not being addressed. We're still working under the constraints of a level 3 hospital. Now, I know Dr. Sugary is currently looking at that, And he's going to bring back a report on how maybe if you not go to a level four, but to a level
3.5
or something. But look, we're back to the Galway Dublin line. There's no specialist services north of that. And that affects us. And, you know, the surgical hub, where's that going to be located? Not in the busiest place where it needs to be in Donegal, but in Sligo. You know, and you have to ask yourself, who is making the decisions about healthcare services in Donegal? And while Tony Canavan might be there at the behest of the HSE in Cilta, it is not him who's making the decisions. He is just absolutely delivering.
It's remarkable because there are God knows how many levels of management between Sean Murphy and Tony Canavan, and it's neither the two of them, you're saying, that are calling the shots.
No, I don't believe they are. I believe this is the policy of the HSE. This is the operating model it's using. We have said from the inception of the HSE as a format for delivering healthcare services that was too big, too cumbersome, and you know it was overloaded with what can you say? People are describing the probably the wrong way to describe them, but managers. But we haven't got the staff. That's reality. We haven't got the beds. That's the reality. And we certainly haven't got the capacity in relation to the accommodation that's needed for a growing emergency department that is daily on your show about overcrowding, the stories of 18 hours, 19 hours, 26 hours waiting for bed. And the vast majority of them are people in their 60 plus years. That's not good enough. Now, this has been going on long enough. Then why have the people who matter, the people who make these policies, who implement the policies, who deliver or are supposed to deliver healthcare service, why are they not taking notice? And in some instances, we talk, I think the management at the hospital need to put their hands up at times and they need to stand up, they need to pull on the Donegal jersey and need to be a bit more publicly vociferous about the lack of resources that's being attributed and invested in Letterkenny University Hospital.
Okay, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it. Councillor Jay McMonagle, who is obviously a member of the Regional Health Forum West. I mean, I'm every interview, the responsibility seems to get further and further away from Donegal. Callers say St. Connell's is sitting vacant while the hospital is struggling with capacity. It is also in a different place, albeit close by, and capacity often is planning, being given permission to move things about, and staff. You know, we could get 1 million beds delivered down there, no problem, potentially, if you know what I mean. But if you don't have the, 4.5 nurses or whatever it might be to run to maintain them. Hi, Greg. The main problem with Letterkenny University Hospital is the likes of yourself and your guests talking about the problem, but clearly avoiding highlighting the real problem. You're doing some serious mental gymnastics here. I suspect, are you on about the increased population, which I referenced in that interview? Is that what you're on about? I'm not sure. I can't read between the lines unless you say it. But if 1 million people come to Donegal, then you have services for that 1 million people, right? Or whatever it might be. If you send people to an area, there are still the same people that are responsible for improving services to accommodate that. Is that what you're talking about? If it is, we're still an aging population, regardless of whomever else might be around, and the hospital needs to be planned to accommodate that, does it not? I think I know what you're saying, but because it was sent in as a little bit of a quiz question, I'm not sure, but I believe I might have got the point you were trying to make. Now, we were sent notice that Donegal County Council and Ishka Éireann have detected traces of home heating oil in the sewer in Milford, and they're asking all homeowners to check their oil tanks and connections for leaks as a matter of urgency. So just double check that with you, please. And I suppose it's not completely unrelated. We're talking about discharges into waterways on a grander scale, potentially. Mick Henry, Senior Inspector in the EPA's Industrial Licence Enforcement Team. Good morning to you, Mick. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to your listeners.
Unauthorised discharges to waterways and odour issues are the most common compliance failures for industry. Talk to me about that and how common are they and how do you find out about them and what enforcement powers do you have?
Yeah, I suppose today, Greg, we publish our enforcement summary for 2024. And I suppose we've been very busy. It's a mixture of some good news and also some not so good news. On the good news front, I suppose we've seen complaints from the public down 46% over the last 3 years. And we've seen a lot of interaction with the public in relation to information being made available. So that's good. I mean, in terms of we've been working hard on our IT side and systems, whatever, so that members of the public can access the information from their homes, whatever. So on the negative side or not so good side, whatever, we've seen a number of the cities deemed a national priority site in 2024. And 10 in particular, whatever, and two of them are from Donegal, obviously, of interest to yourselves there, whatever. And the issues mainly relate to inadequate odour management and also inadequate management of emissions to water, whatever.
And the two cases in Donegal, for an example, have those issues been rectified?
Yeah, in the Arrivo, okay, the two facilities in specifically or in particular and for Donegal are the Arrivo site there in Killigordon and also the Linmore anaerobic digestion facility there outside Ballybuffet, whatever. On the Arrivo side or in their situation, whatever, the issues related to a fish kettle, whatever, and those issues have been rectified and were currently in the courts in relation to the particular instance there, whatever. And we worked with the logs agency, whatever, gathered all the evidence and put the file to the DPP, who deemed it necessary or deemed it
actionable, I suppose.
And
in relation to Glenmore Biogas for odour issues, resolutions found there?
Yeah, they're mainly in relation to odour emissions arising from the facility. That particular facility takes in different types of animal byproducts and waste, whatever. And it's important that they manage the odour emissions arising from their activities on site. And we've seen issues. We've been out there a fair bit in the last couple of years, whatever. And we've seen issues in relation to orders, and they've been matched by complaints from the public. So,
and generally speaking, Mark, Mick, the EPA has teeth, doesn't it? Because, and I mean this generally, legal action has led to really some quite significant fines. So it's very much in the interests of those in, it seems particularly the food and drink and waste sectors, to ensure that they don't fall foul of the EPA.
Yeah, in particular, those are the two sectors that we've focused a lot of resources on, whatever. We've a range of tools available to us, whatever, including site visits, issuing warning letters, whatever, and ultimately prosecution if the need arises, whatever. We would see that as the last resort, but we're not afraid to take cases if they warrant it or if they're needed, whatever. We've had two fairly significant results in the courts recently, whatever. One for 500,000 for a waste facility down south in Kerry, and the second was in relation to a food and drink facility in Roscommon, where the fines issued were in 350,000, whatever. So it's no small matter if you don't comply, whatever. And if things persist, then we'll continue to look to the courts to actually penalise these cities. But in the main, whatever, we would expect licensees to actually step up to the mark and ensure compliance is in order, whatever. Because if it's not, then it goes down the route of legal action.
Finally, Mick, if you don't mind, how do the public, if they have concerns, raise an issue or a complaint with the Environmental Protection Agency?
Yeah, I suppose we, as I said earlier on, we make a lot of information available through our information systems, Leap Online, whatever, and there is on our website, members of the public can log complaints. They can also ring ourselves in relation to any issues they have in relation to facilities, but also they can also contact the facility themselves, whatever. The public are a very important resource for us. They're in the community and surrounding these cities 24/7. We can obviously only be there periodically, but if they do notice something that's not right or they feel that needs to be raised, then they can also contact us and we'll follow up on each and every complaint that we get.
McHenry, Senior Inspector in the EPA's Industrial Licence Enforcement Team. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Greg.
All right, take care of yourself. Righty-o. That's entertainment's coming up after 11 o'clock. I mean, obviously, you know, we're talking about an awful lot of serious stuff, not all serious stuff too. I mean, this week alone, we've, you know, platformed some really important stories in our community, be it the destruction of that church in Derrybeg, be it the hardship families are going through, be it stories of inspiration, where someone has defied the odds to make a success of themselves. We talk about an awful lot of different things here, but we do at this time dedicate an hour where we just talk about stuff that we do when we're trying to get away from all of that, isn't it? Whether it's go out for a walk, go visit somewhere, watch something on the TV, go to the cinema or the theatre. And we want to share you to share your happy stories in relation to that. Are you watching something good in the telly? Did you have a nice experience? Have you been away? Share whatever you like. And we'll talk about it with our two guests and two very interesting guests as well coming up after the news at 11 o'clock. And I've been pretty good in getting through as many comments as possible this morning. Any that I didn't will be carried on to business on Monday. But as I say, I think I have been pretty good today in getting most of them out there. Right. And by the way, tell your friends, we're back broadcasting across our FM network at full tilt now, thanks to our tech teams getting the wee issue that was beyond our control and on just part of the way of delivering radio, I suppose, but it's fixed now. All right, back with the news in a minute.